Am I on? Is it time? Everyone stopped talking, so I guess it is, one way or another. Well, it's good to be with you guys tonight. I'm glad to have the opportunity to teach class for you guys again. Joe let me know this week that he was going to be out of town, and so he asked me if I'd like to come and just teach another one of the classes, another one of the questions of Jesus. So I told him I'd be glad to do that, and I'd be excited. Whether or not you're excited or not, that remains to be seen. But I am glad to be here to teach you tonight. We're going to be studying in John 18. John 18, so go ahead and turn there. And that's where we're going to begin our study tonight. So go ahead and get there in your Bible. And before we actually read and dive into our study, let's go ahead and pray. Dear Lord our God, we thank you so much for this opportunity to be together to study your word. It is a blessing that we so often take for granted, the fact that we have your words from your Spirit preserved for us. Lord, please help us not to take that for granted tonight and to appreciate what a tremendous blessing it is, and how in so many times and in so many years past there were people who did not have what we get to enjoy today. So as we open up this word, let us appreciate it for what it is. Let us accept it. And let us be grateful for it, even in the ways that it may challenge us or call us to grow or call us to be different. Please help us to accept it and be grateful for it. Please be with us in our study. Let us find the truth and hold to it. In your Son's name we ask these things. Amen. All right, so I want to begin by asking you a question that everyone should say yes to, but I don't know if everyone will. Is there anything that you will irrationally or unreasonably defend? All right? Is there anything that you are completely unreasonable about? That if you're talking about it, you'll be discussing this one thing with somebody, and you could know, I'm dead wrong. Like, they got me dead to rights. That was a really good point you just made, but you know what? I'm going to keep arguing anyway. Anybody have something like that they argue about? Yeah. What is it, Rick? I'm kidding. So I'll tell you what mine is. So in 2017, I was in Houston, Texas, and I got invited by one of the deacons there to an Astros baseball game, my first Astros playoff game, where I got this. And in that game, the star player for the Houston Astros, Jose Altuve, hit 3 home runs. It is a memory I will never forget. I dearly hold on to, and it becomes even better because for the first time in the entire franchise's history, the Astros went on to do what that year? Stop! They were already cheating, so they didn't go on to cheat. No, they went on to win the World Series, all right? And I'll tell you what, I'm completely unreasonable about the cheating scandal with the Astros. I am dead to rights. Every point that everybody makes is right. It's probably true, most definitely true, that they didn't deserve the championship they won. But you know what? I'll argue it with you till my death, okay? So I irrationally defend the Astros. You ever have anything like that you defend that's unreasonable? You know, that's a funny quirk about mankind, is that sometimes we can be staring the truth dead in the face, and yet we still refuse to accept it. And yet we still find ways to push it away or cover our ears or suppress it, push it down, cover it up, and get it out of our sight. We, even when the truth is right in front of us, we still sometimes defend ourselves and defend our position. You ever have a moment like that with your spouse? You're in the midst of an argument and it gets kind of heated. You guys are probably doing what you shouldn't be doing, probably raising your voice too much. And because you've got so much invested in the argument, when they make that really good point, you stop for a second and you're like, I should give up right now. And then you just keep going. You ever done that? You ever done that with maybe a friend that you're defending, or maybe a political candidate, that they may have done something that was really wrong and really dumb, but you know what? I'm really invested in them, so I'm just gonna defend them even though it really doesn't make sense. It's a funny quirk of human behavior. Sometimes we defend our position even when we're obviously wrong. We push the truth away, we cover up our ears. And you know, when logic and reason are no longer reliable defenses, when we no longer can rely on logic and reason, how do we sometimes defend ourselves? How do we make our arguments? What do we do? Yeah, we talk louder, right? I raise my voice, all right? Maybe that'll help. That's why I talk so loud during my sermons. What else? What do we do? I make an emotional plea, right? Absolutely. You made a good point, but I'm gonna use raw emotion to argue my case, all right? Because this is how I feel. I feel strongly about this. Okay, so I try to avoid it, right? I try to loophole my way around it and ignore what the actual question is. Sometimes we get angry, sometimes we get belligerent. Sometimes instead of actually having a discussion, we just resort to throwing punches, not literal punches, metaphorical punches, insults, hurt feelings, things like that. Sometimes we do everything we can when the truth stares us dead in the eye. Cover it up, suppress it, push it away. So tonight I want to take you to John 18, and I want to take you to Jerusalem, and I want to take you to the moment when Jesus is on trial in the middle of the night. By this time in John 18, the Roman cohort has come to the Garden of Gethsemane. They've been led by Judas Iscariot. They've taken Jesus away. The other 11 apostles, they have scattered because they're scared of getting caught, and they've departed from Jesus. And so under the cover of darkness, Jesus is led away to stand trial before Annas. And that's where our study this evening begins. John 18, start with me in verse 18. The Bible says this, "Now the slaves and the officers were standing there, having made a charcoal fire, for it was cold and they were warming themselves. And Peter was also with them, standing and warming himself. The high priest then questioned Jesus about his disciples and about his teaching. And Jesus answered him, 'I have spoken openly to the world. I always taught in the synagogues and in the temple where all the Jews come together. And I spoke nothing in secret. Why do you question me? Question those who heard what I have spoke to them. They know what I said.' When he said this, one of the officers standing nearby struck Jesus, saying, 'Is that the way you answer the high priest?' And Jesus answered him, 'If I have spoken wrongly, testify of the wrong. But if rightly, why do you strike me?' So Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest." And so our study this evening centers around that question that Jesus asks in John 18 and verse 23, where Jesus says those poignant words, "If I have spoken wrongly, testify of the wrong. But if rightly, why do you strike me?" You know, just as a brief refresher, we said at the beginning of our Questions of Jesus class that Jesus doesn't ask questions because he's looking to gain information, right? He already has all the information. Jesus asks questions to get people to look at themselves, to get them to look in the mirror and see themselves clearly. He asks questions to start conversations between a man and his soul. And so this question, "Why do you strike me?" it goes straight to the heart of that officer standing nearby who struck him. It goes straight to the heart of all of those who are involved in this sham of a trial. And it addresses not only what happened that night, but it addresses how these religious leaders have treated Jesus since he began his ministry just 3 years before. And this question says a lot about the heart of people and how we sometimes react to things that are obviously true. Why do you strike me? Now, before we get into all the application, let's start by just getting the lay of the land and making sure we understand exactly what's happening here in these verses. John 18 and verse 19, the trial begins with the high priest questioning Jesus. And according to verse 19, what is the high priest questioning Jesus about? What's he want to know about? His teaching and his disciples, right? So he questions him, "I want to know about your disciples. I want to know about your teaching," which is funny because don't you think he knows about the teaching of Jesus? obviously he knows about the teaching of Jesus. He's not blind here. He knows exactly what's been going on with Jesus this whole time. And so it seems like in this question, the high priest is implying something. The Jewish authorities know very well during the ministry of Jesus what he said and what he taught to the crowds. They know very well about that because during his teaching, they're sending people all the time to go hear Jesus, to go check up on him. It says in the Gospels that the high priests and leaders, they sent people to hear Jesus and ask him questions so that they could report back. They know what's going on. They're like the first century NSA. They really know what's going on with Jesus. And so it seems like the implication here is that Jesus isn't really being transparent when he's in public. The idea, I think, that he's getting at is that Jesus is teaching one thing in public, but privately, maybe his message is a little more worrisome, a little more radical, right? The public gets one message, but the inner circle, that's where Jesus really does that radical teaching that we'd be really upset about. And so the high priest wants to know two things. First of all, who are your disciples? And number two, what exactly have you been saying to them? Now, according to verse 20, how does Jesus answer those questions? What's he say? Yeah, absolutely. He says, I'm not hiding anything. I've been completely transparent with you guys. So I want you to notice three things that I think you can find in this message. First of all, I want you to notice that he doesn't say anything about his disciples, which is kind of cool, right? It's kind of cool. He didn't say anything about his disciples. We read back earlier in John 18 that when the cohort comes to arrest Jesus in the garden, he asks them who they're looking for. They say Jesus of Nazareth. And then he says, well, then let these go their way, right? You came for me. Don't grab my apostles and imprison them. Let them go. And he did that on purpose because he didn't want to lose any of his people except for the son of perdition, as it was promised would happen. And so Jesus here, you see a little bit, he's protecting his guys. And I think that's really neat. He is determined that he's not going to lose any of them except Judas, which is interesting because where's Peter? He's in the courtyard. He's right there. And Jesus could have easily been like, you know what, Peter, you betrayed me. All right. Hey, there's one of them. He could have done that. He's not going to do that to Peter. He's not going to do that to Peter because he's determined to keep his people. But then again, what Kathy said is right. That what Jesus tells him is that what he teaches privately is the same as what he teaches publicly. He says, I have been transparent. If you want to know what I'm teaching, just ask the people who came and heard my messages. Because I tell the same thing in public that I tell in private. Now, it's obviously true that Jesus did some private teaching and he didn't have only public conversations. There were some private conversations that happened between him and the apostles. But the teaching he does in private is not substantively different than the teaching he's doing in public. He's not hiding the ball. He's saying exactly the same thing privately that he says publicly. And by the way, what would it say about a person if they were unwilling to say publicly what they had been saying privately? What's that say about them? What might that imply? Yeah, obviously there's some sort of dishonesty there, right? Absolutely, absolutely. It implies they're not truthful. They're hypocritical. Absolutely, absolutely. It may imply that they don't really believe what they're saying or they don't really feel like they can support what they're saying, right? If I do something or say something privately, but I hide it from the public eye, maybe I'm doing that because I feel like if the public heard it, I really wouldn't be able to defend myself, right? So there's a lot of dishonesty and hypocrisy involved in that. And so Jesus says, I'm not doing that. Everything that I've said privately, I've been willing to say publicly. Absolutely. Jesus is not afraid of the light. He's not afraid for anybody to know what he's been saying privately. But then Jesus does a third thing. He doesn't just protect his disciples and say, I've been transparent with you guys. He also then asks a question. What question does he ask? Verse 21. Why do you question me? Why do you question me? So, there you go. Actually, in this class, there are two questions of Jesus. You see that? So you're welcome. You got two knocked out. How about that? I want you to notice about this question, when Jesus says, why do you question me? I want you to appreciate that this question would have stung. Because in a few ways, this question that Jesus asks is a bit of an accusation. It's a gentle accusation, but it is an accusation against what these people are doing here in the middle of the night. So I want you to notice a couple of things. That when Jesus says, why do you question me? One thing that he's doing is he's drawing attention to the fact that in this trial, there are no witnesses. In this trial, this is the cover of darkness. This is happening in the middle of the night. Nobody knows what's going on. And Jesus says, why would that be? Why do you question me? Where are the witnesses? Well, they're at home. They're in bed. They're asleep. Nobody really knows what's happening because this is being done under the cover of darkness. What does that say about their intentions? What does that say about their honesty? And I want you to consider this secondly, that Jesus is likely also drawing attention to the fact that this trial is being conducted illegally. Now, that's not hard and fast and sure, but many, many commentators, most people believe it's generally accepted that the way that this trial was playing out was actually illegal according to the Jewish custom. So many commentators suggest that according to Jewish law, it would have been illegal to actually question the person who was on trial. And that in Jewish custom, under Jewish law, that you actually had to question witnesses and not the person who was actually on trial. And so when Jesus says, why do you question me? What he's likely saying is, you need to question the people that I spoke to. You need to question witnesses because not only is that an honest way to go about it, but that's actually the legal way. And so with this question, Jesus is probably saying, this trial is illegal. This is not the way this is supposed to happen. And most importantly, what Jesus is doing with this question is he's pointing out that they're being dishonest. They're conducting this trial in the manner they're conducting it because they know what the witnesses are going to say. Why don't they want to call witnesses? What's going to happen if they call the people of the city, the people who thronged around Jesus, the people who heard him talk, heard him preach? What's going to happen if they call those witnesses? What are they going to say about him? Huh? Oh, maybe they'll cause an uprising. Maybe, maybe. What are they going to say about Jesus, though? What are they going to testify about him? Never man ever spoke like that. No man ever spoke like this man spoke. Yeah, absolutely. Maybe they'd get one of those people that welcomed Jesus in the triumphal entry. Maybe someone would stand up. What do you think about this Jesus? Well, Hosanna to the Son of David. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Hosanna in the highest. You see why they're not getting witnesses? Because they know how the people feel about Jesus. And they know if the witnesses testify about who Jesus is, it's not going to be what they want to hear. In fact, we know from Matthew's account that finding a witness is going to prove very difficult for them because when they bring Jesus before Caiaphas, they actually do try to do witnesses, right? So they don't do the same song and dance they do in John 18, but they actually try to get witnesses. And what's the problem with those witnesses? Even the ones that they compel to lie, what's the problem? Yeah, their testimony contradicts and they can't really get their stories to line up. So even when they compel him to lie and get people to tell false things about him so that they can have a witness, even that doesn't really pan out. So Jesus says here, why do you question me? Question those who heard me. Because the fact that they're not calling witnesses says something about their hearts. It says something about how they're responding to the truth that's right in front of their eyes. They're doing everything they can to cover it up, push it away, close their ears, and reject what's obviously true. So when Jesus says, why do you question me? What he's saying is, the jig is up. We all know what's going on here. We know that what you're doing is illegal. We know that what you're doing is dishonest. And obviously, that question stung a little bit. Because how do the people standing around respond when Jesus asked that question? How do they respond? Physical violence, right? They respond by striking Jesus, right? Always a sign that somebody's reasonable when they answer your arguments with violence. Always a sign that somebody's reasonable. You know, it's obvious that that Jesus has gotten to them. It's obvious that his accusation has pricked their hearts. Because when Jesus says, "Why do you question me?" They don't give a reasonable answer. They don't explain why the proceedings are happening this way. They don't look at him and say, "You know, we should have witnesses. And you know what? We can find some witnesses because you're a bad guy and we know we can find people to prove it." They don't say that. They don't look at Jesus and say, "Well, let's have a discussion, right? Let's have a discussion about all these miracles that you're producing. Let's have a discussion about what this means," because they're not interested in the discussion. They're not really interested in what's true. And when Jesus asks this question, he pricks their hearts and he holds up the mirror and he shows them to themselves that they're the kind of people that are not accepting what's obviously true. They're doing everything they can to ignore it, push it away. And so that's his point when he asked the question with which we begin our class. If I have spoken wrongly, testify of the wrong. But if rightly, why do you strike me? Jesus hadn't said anything rude or inappropriate or wrong, but they strike him nonetheless. Jesus even gives them a chance to explain what he said wrong. If I said something wrong, why not defend yourself? If I'm wrong about this, then explain it. Defend yourself. Help me understand. Why not answer my question? Why not communicate with me? Why not discuss the ideas that I'm throwing out here on the table? No, they're not going to do that. They're just going to hit him. And you know, that's what we do when we have a clean conscience about having a discussion, having a debate. When we have a clean conscience, if we're really honest, that's what we do. We communicate. We have a discussion. We exchange ideas. Some people do it more loudly than others. Some people are better at that than others. Some people talk faster than others. Yeah, but that's what we do. When we are honest and we are really trying to get to the truth, we exchange ideas. We talk about it. And so this officer standing nearby, he strikes Jesus, not because Jesus said anything wrong, but because Jesus said everything right. And he wasn't interested in what the truth really was. Now, we all like to think that we're reasonable people, but you all admit it, at least you did, right? Yeah, there we go. And Ray, and me, how about that? We all admit that sometimes we're unreasonable. And sometimes we aren't willing to be honest when the truth is staring us dead in the face. We all know what it feels like to be that officer that was standing by Jesus, who understood, probably, that what's going on with this trial is highly irregular and possibly illegal and definitely dishonest. And he doesn't want to hear somebody accuse him of that. And so when he realizes that he's done something wrong and his heart is pricked by that, instead of responding to the truth, he strikes out in anger. We know that feeling. We've been guilty of that ourselves. And we understand that when we hear truthful things that we don't like, it very often stirs up anger within us. It very often makes us want to cover it up, cover our ears, push it away. You know, that's something interesting, that when you think about it, when you think about our response to truth, our response to accusations or criticism, you know, I never get mad when somebody accuses me of something that is just totally false. You know, I really don't. I guess I understand at some point if somebody's saying something false about you, you know, and they're posting it on Facebook and they went to, you know, city council and told everybody about it and they told everybody at the church about it and they're slandering you and they're taking out billboards and they're putting it up. At that point, yeah, it probably makes you mad, okay? But really, really, on the surface level, when somebody accuses you of something that's totally off base, it doesn't make me mad. It makes me want to laugh. If you came up to me today and said, "Jonathan, you know what? You're a terrible drunk," I would laugh. I would laugh because that is the furthest thing from the truth. Brothers and sisters, I have lots of flaws. I have lots of problems, lots of sins that I need to work on, lots of things I need to get better at. I have never had a problem with alcohol. It has never been a temptation for me. It's never been something I've struggled with. So if someone comes up and says, Jonathan, you're just a drunk, that's funny. It doesn't make me mad. But if someone comes up to me and says, you know, Jonathan, you're not very conscientious. You don't really think about others very much, what their thoughts and feelings are. Sometimes you come off as rude. Sometimes you really don't listen when people are talking to you. Boy, that'll make me mad pretty quick. And you know why that is? Why? Because there's a nugget of that that's true. There's a nugget of that that's true, and I know it. And I'm working on it, but it makes me upset. Call me a drunk, it doesn't make me upset. You say I'm not very conscientious? That'll get me. Because I know to a degree it's true. And so when we have those moments when those accusations, those criticisms come up against us and we stare them dead in the face, what are we tempted to do? Well, we're tempted to do exactly what that officer standing nearby did. We don't accept it. We don't say, thank you so much for hurting my feelings. We want to strike out in anger. We want to take that truth, ignore it, push it away, and stubbornly dig in our heels. And so in this story of Jesus, we learn something very important about mankind. That it's not really falsehood that makes us angry. Oftentimes, it's the truth. And in that moment, when truth pricks our heart, we face a very real temptation to suppress the truth, to push it down, to cover our ears, to ignore it. And sometimes that's exactly what we do. And we see stories of that all over the Bible, don't we? Right? We see stories of people who have the truth presented to them, staring them right in the face, and rather than just accepting it, they do whatever they can to ignore it and push it away. You got a Bible story? Bible story where somebody is staring the truth right in the face and they push it away. Who's got one? Okay, the rich young ruler, right? Okay, he picks his worldly treasures instead of picking Jesus. Very good. What else? Yeah. Peter being accused. Okay, yeah, absolutely, because of the fear of the consequences of being associated with Jesus. Yeah, what else? What else? Bible story where someone pushed the truth away. Yes, sir. King Agrippa, right? When he tells him to come back at a more convenient time. Absolutely. Pushing that truth away. I don't want to deal with this right now. Maybe I'll deal with it later. You're missing the one that I've been hinting at the whole time. Pharaoh? Okay, yeah. I got all these plagues coming and I'm just going to ignore it. What about Stephen, right? Stephen stands up, he preaches that sermon, that wonderful sermon, and then he says, you guys are all stiff-necked and uncircumcised. And what does the text literally say? When they heard that, they gnashed their teeth at him, they covered their ears, literally. They rushed at him with one impulse, they drove him out of the city, they stoned him to death. Stories like that all over the Bible. You have the example in Amos chapter 7 where the king tells Amos, hey, I know you've been prophesying, but why don't you go prophesy over there? Get out of here because we don't want to hear what God has to say to us. You have the story of John the Baptist when he talks to Herod and Herodias about their unlawful marriage. What happens to John? Absolutely. Not going to listen to the truth, not going to respond to it. We'll just kill John the Baptist. Yeah, the story in one of my favorite stories, Jeremiah 36. Ellison calls this the story of the cold king because it's the king of Jerusalem and the prophet Jeremiah has written the prophecy about the judgment that's going to come against the city because of all of their sin. And when the officials bring that document to the king, he's sitting in his palace in the winter and the fire's blazing before him and he takes his pen and he cuts line by line of that prophecy and throws it into the fire. Use it as kindling. Truth is staring him right in the face. He throws it away. Lots of examples of that in the Bible. And that means that we need to be careful to visit well because it's a common quirk. It's a common theme that we find in humanity. You know, we like to tell ourselves that pretty much everybody is honest. And pretty much everybody, when they see the truth, when they hear the truth, when they see something that's reasonable and rational, that they'll accept it and that they'll listen to it. But the Bible teaches us something very different, that most people are not very honest with the truth when it stares them dead in the face. And that's the thing that Christians have to do that's different. We are the ones who see the truth and we accept it and we change because of it, no matter what it requires of us, no matter how hard it may be, no matter how much it hurts our feelings. We are the kind of people who listen and accept it and change because of it. But at the same time, sometimes that's hard to see, isn't it? Now, have you ever had one of those moments where you think you're being completely reasonable, but somebody who loves you is like, yeah, you're totally out of your mind right now. Have you had a moment like that? Are you going to nod again? Yeah. Yes. Okay. Nobody's nodding. No one's willing to admit this. Okay. A few more hands. We're talking about covering our ears, guys. Okay. Need more hands. So sometimes we don't see ourselves clearly. Sometimes it's hard for us to see when we're pushing the truth away and when we're not really accepting what's obvious. And so I do want to look at the behavior of these people here with the trial of Jesus. And I want to point out some things that might be signs that we can see in our own lives, that maybe we're not really accepting the truth that's right in front of our face. And so let me say first of all that you might be suppressing the truth, you might be covering your ears if your first response to what somebody says is anger, right? You might be covering up the truth if your first response to what somebody says is anger. Now, why might that be a sign of suppressing the truth? We've already kind of talked about it. Why is that a sign? Okay, what do you mean by that? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it can definitely hurt because people are pointing out things that I want to keep hidden or that I think are hidden, right? And so I can get angry about that. But we talked about this earlier as well, that sometimes I respond in anger because if I really did have a good response to it when somebody made an accusation against me or said something about what I'm doing, if I really did have a good answer, if I really felt strongly about it, what would I do? Rather than get angry, what would I do? I'd defend myself. We'd have a simple discussion about it, right? I'd give you my ideas. I'd tell you exactly why I did what I did or why what you think is wrong really isn't wrong. We'd just discuss it. And so if the first thing I do when somebody accuses me of something is respond in anger, then maybe that's a sign that I'm suppressing the truth. That's exactly what happens in the story of Jesus. When Jesus says, "Why do you question me?" First response, gonna hit you in the face. So also, you might be suppressing the truth if you only talk to people who you know will agree with you. I'm glad I made you laugh. Because we do that too sometimes, don't we? Right? We have this thing that's going on. We have this opinion. And the only people that I'm really willing to talk to about it are the people who agree with me. Now, there's a word for that in our common language. I really like it. It's a phrase. Two words. Echo chamber, right? We love to create our echo chambers where the only opinions, the only advice that I allow into my life is the stuff that I agree with. We create an echo chamber. And that's exactly what these religious leaders are doing, aren't they? That's why they're having a trial at midnight. That's why there are no witnesses. That's why they're doing this when everyone's in bed. Because they don't want anybody who might disagree with what they're doing to stand up and say what they believe, say what's true. And so if I have something that I'm only willing to talk to people I know agree with me about, that might be a sign that I'm not really striving to find the truth. Maybe I'm pushing the truth away. And in addition to that, it might be a sign that I'm suppressing the truth if I hide and conceal my beliefs from everybody. Right? That's another thing that we see them do. They're not willing to have this trial out in daylight. They don't want their trial to face the scrutiny of the masses, the scrutiny of daylight. And sometimes we do that too. That I hold on to something, or I practice something, I have some activity that I'm involved in, and you know, I've kind of convinced myself that it's okay and it's going to be just fine, but you know what? I ain't going to say a word to anybody about me doing it, because I don't want to come under any scrutiny. Maybe that's a sign. Maybe that's a sign that I'm really pushing the truth away. And I'm not really interested in what's true. I rather just want to do what I'm doing and continue in that. You know, and having said all of that, I do think that there are several things we could ask, several situations that we can consider how this plays out in real life. You know, I wonder how honest we are sometimes about these certain things. I wonder how honest we are when it comes to our entertainment, when it comes to what we watch on the internet or watch on TV or the kind of movies that we go to, the kind of music that we listen to. I wonder if we're really honest about that. And if we're really willing to let our choices stand up to the scrutiny of the truth. So let me ask you, when it comes to what you watch for entertainment, do you hide what you believe? You hide what you watch? Do you only talk to people that you know watch the same thing? And would you be here's the real question about your entertainment. You ready? Here's the dynamite question. If an elder was coming over to your house to babysit your child, and he asked if he could use your Netflix while he's there, how do you feel about that? That's the real test for whether or not you feel good about the entertainment that you're consuming. Or maybe when it comes to our entertainment, do I get angry when people criticize my choices? Maybe I'm watching something or I'm doing something and I talk to somebody about what I'm watching, what I'm you know, listening to for entertainment, and they tell me, you know, I really don't think that you ought to be listening to that, you ought to be doing that. What do I do? Do I stand up and say, you know, actually I have some good reasons for why I think this is okay and why I think you're wrong? Or do we get mad, get angry that they've deigned to criticize my entertainment choices? When it comes to our entertainment, do we push the truth away? Or are we willing to listen to the truth? And this is an important one. One that's, it's really hard to deal with. And I want to be very careful with this. But in terms of modesty, in terms of what we wear and how we cover our bodies, how we dress, are we pushing the truth away, or are we ready to accept the truth, listen to what people have to say? We're really interested in what God says. When it comes to modesty, is your first response anger? If somebody were to come up to you and say, I have a problem with the way you're dressed, I just don't think you should be wearing that, or I saw this picture that you posted online, I just don't think that's appropriate, what's your first response? Is your first response anger? You get mad at that other person. I can't believe they would say something about the way that I dress. When it comes to modesty, maybe do we ever conceal it? Are there only certain things that we'll wear when Christians are around, and there are things that we'll wear when we know Christians aren't going to be around? You know, it's really hard to draw a line, and I'm not here to draw lines about modesty, but we have to ask ourselves, if we're concealing what we wear and we're only willing to wear certain things in certain places and we get mad whenever anybody says anything to us, maybe it says something about where my heart is when it comes to that. Yes, sir. Certainly. Defensiveness might be a sign of that too. And there are other things that we could ask about. I'm kind of running out of time here, but consider that in terms of doctrinal matters. Do you conceal what your doctrinal beliefs are? If you really felt strongly about what you believed, why would you hide it? Do you get angry whenever somebody challenges what you believe? When somebody challenges what you believe and what you think, and do you respond to them by opening up your Bible and giving them a passage of scripture and saying, this is why I believe what I believe, or do you just get mad about it and shut them off and stop talking to them? How do we handle doctrinal matters? Are we really interested in the truth, or are we trying to push it away? And so this one is in my notes. I taught this class first in the college class. It was on Sunday morning. I guess it doesn't really apply here because we're here on Sunday night. But I did mention church attendance, right? Because this happens with church attendance too. Sometimes when it comes to church attendance, people hide what they're really doing. Maybe they don't come on Sunday night. Maybe they don't come to Bible class. They just come to worship. And somebody says, well, why weren't you here? And rather than being honest and saying, well, I don't think that I should have to come on Sunday night, they give a lame excuse, and they kind of conceal what they really believe, what they're really doing. Or maybe they get angry when somebody asks them why they weren't here when they could have been here, rather than being honest. And so all of this is to say, brothers and sisters, I think just in so many different situations, we have to be careful about how we respond to the truth. And I'm obviously not saying that you need to accept everything that you hear. You don't need to just, you know, whenever anybody says anything, just say, oh, I'm going to believe that now because I want to have an open and honest heart and I don't want to be pushing the truth away. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that we must be careful that we are not rejecting things simply because they're uncomfortable or inconvenient, simply because they prick our hearts. That if we reject something, it should be because we found it to be false, not because we found it to be uncomfortable. And that's exactly what Jesus is saying when he says, why do you strike me? If I have spoken wrongly, testify of the wrong. But if rightly, why do you strike me? We need to make sure we're not like that officer who stood by Jesus. I'm like him sometimes. How about you? But the hallmark of a Christian is an open and an honest heart that is willing to respond to the truth. Those who don't cover their ears, those who don't push it away because it's uncomfortable, those who respond it and accept it, even if it's challenging, no matter how radical the change it requires. That's the kind of people we need to be. All right. That's all I've got. So you guys are dismissed.